All right, happy Friday, everybody. Giants in Miami. Haven't been on the East Coast in 2 years, so that's unusual. And we'll find out what they got when they go to Miami and Philly. We'll talk to Mike a little bit about that Dodgers-Padres situation going on, too, down in Southern California. But first and foremost, just a happy Friday morning to you, Mike. We love it on the UMA guest line. How you doing?
Morning, Mike.
Fantastic. Day off, you know, kind of recharge. And it's so cool because the Giants get to go east. I mean, they didn't get to do that all last year. And not only that, but they get to spend an off day in Florida, you know. And so it's kind of when they take something away from you for a year, you miss it. And when you get it back, it feels good. And these guys are pumped up about it. And they're playing well. They got it going in the standings. So a lot of vibe right now in this Giants clubhouse, which is amazingly positive, and I love it.
Yeah, we haven't talked to you since the Wednesday finale. Starts with Johnny Cueto, I guess. We'll start with the bad news and then move on to the good. But to see him do that little throat gesture and then just call trainer Dave Greshner out was no good. And now they say lat tightness, 10 days. I mean, listen, none of us is in the imaging tube. We don't know the MRI, but this is something we should probably prepare. It's going to go probably longer than 10 days, I would imagine, because that's a sensitive area, huh?
Be positive, Murph. Be positive,
yes.
Murph.
Yes.
Can't go there.
No.
They're saying it's a level one or whatever, and so I'm thinking, okay, that's a mild strain. Maybe this thing starts to feel better in 5 or 6 days. I mean, he's in incredible shape, so the better condition you are, the faster you come back from these things. So I'm hoping that it's just 10 days. But, you know, here's the other problem, too. It's April. You have a guy like that who's such a valuable part of your team. You know, this is the time of year when you can go a couple of days longer so that, you know, you can get this thing truly behind you. So I'm just gonna go day to day on this, but I'm hoping that he gets back sooner than later.
He was working on another gem. I mean, that was 5 2/3 of shutout after his 8 2/3 on Friday. I mean, he's in a place right now. And this was to Casale we talked about, too. And you had predicted that he would make good music with Casale, and he did, Mike.
Right.
Oh, Casale, he's got it going, man. He's won me over. I mean, I think he's a perfect complement to any pitcher. And when you learn a pitcher, it's not just learning their stuff. It's learning how they like to work. How do they like to work with nobody on? How do they like to work with somebody on? Do they like to go fast? Do they like to go slow? Does their mind start to race? Do they start to forget about the rhythm? Well, those are things that a catcher has to be responsible for. And I think that what he does is really, really evident when he catches a guy like Cueto, because Cueto is a guy that he wants to rock and roll. He wants that sign down. Of all the pitchers, I think he's the guy that puts the most pressure on a catcher to put down the right sign. But the thing about Cueto, you know, and we saw this last year when he was catching Joey Bart, who's a young catcher, and he's still learning all these things, is that when he didn't get the right finger, it would really upset his rhythm. Then no matter what finger you put down, it wasn't the right one. When you have Johnny Cueto's confidence as a catcher, he'll go with what you suggest, even if it's not what he was thinking of at the time, because he trusts you and it feeds his rhythm. It's just that little... It's that little bitty rock and roll that defines how comfortable he is with a catcher. And Casale's won him over, and that's very cool. Now, if you go back to Cueto's first start, there was, you know, he was in Seattle, and he didn't have a great rhythm. We kind of thought, man, his night might be over in the third or fourth inning. And then all of a sudden, the fourth inning, he got his rhythm. And he hasn't lost it since. And we started to see things from him we hadn't seen in a while. Reach back velocity at 94 with two strike counts. Being able to locate his stuff away from the fastball, his breaking ball and his changeup on both sides of the plate. And this is what he had going until he had that little snag that got him out of the game. But, you know, it leads me to believe that when he does come back, whether it's 10 days or 8 days or 3 weeks, we don't know, I don't think he's going to have any problem getting back into a rhythm. So, basically, we're going to get the old Johnny Cueto back. We're getting all these old veterans back. Posey, Crawford, yeah. Cueto, Longoria, and it feels pretty good.
We just can't say enough about Posey. I mean, just really, their ERA is top five in all of big league baseball, and I'm saying it's because of Posey. I really am, Mike. I mean, he's that good, right?
Well, I think this year, you know, we've watched him at the plate, and we've marveled at how he's turning on the inside pitch and how he's driving the ball the other way with some backspin and carry, and it's a real obvious explanation. You know, he's got his lower body back. But we haven't talked about is how the lower body, once it comes back and you're not catching on one and a half leg, how that helps you behind the plate. Not just coming out of a squat and rifling a bullet to second base, throwing guys out that really shouldn't be thrown out. I mean, that to me is that's the icing on the cake. But how solid is he behind the plate? The way that he receives, the way that he very subtly gets his chest behind his glove when he's moving to the left side of the strike zone or to the right side of the strike zone. That is one of his – just he does that naturally. And that's one of the things that really persuades an umpire to perhaps go out of his comfort zone on a strike zone and to get your corner pitches. And then the softness of his hands. And, I mean, all that thing, all those things, those physical things, and then the mental side of it, as we've talked about with Casale, working a guy's rhythm. Well, nobody's better than Posey. Nobody.
It's been great, yeah.
Yeah, and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, sorry to jump in there, Mike. I heard a pause. I jumped in because I was just getting excited to talk about this series coming up, and changes too that are going on. You know, it's interesting. Just this isn't like a huge move, but I just wanted to ask you about it. Lamont Wade went on the 10-day, I believe, with a strained oblique strain, and they recalled Steven Duggar. And I know he's probably, I don't know what kind of role he's going to play, but he's just one of these guys who I think most fans have, I don't know, probably forgotten about. And it's a journey for him, you know? And what do you think? When Duggar, you know, gets to the clubhouse in Miami today and he's, you know, putting on that uni, it's been a yo-yo ride for him. I wonder if you can kind of put yourself in his shoes and think about what he can bring to the team.
Well, I mean, he's going to bring defense, number one. And I think he's the best option in center field defensively. You know, and his at-bats are saying he's swinging the bat real well down at the alternate side. I still think he has to prove to me that he can hit the inside fastball. I still think that he has a window there that you can go to if you're pitching against him. But that's something that you can cover up that weakness. You can learn a swing. It's a bent arm swing. It's an inside out swing, and I think that's his ticket to more playing time. If he can cover up that inside hole right there on his hands in the inside corner, guess what? He can play. I think his best defense against it right now is take the pitch. Don't try and hit it. Mm-hmm. But you know that requires reps. That requires playing time. You know, he wasn't getting consistent playing time last year. He was at the alternate side, and those are not the same as if you're in a big league game or even a triple A game. So, you know, we always talk about how the minor leaguers got stunted last year because, you know, they lost a year of development. Well, it happened, too, with Steven Duggar. And because of that, you know, we're still waiting for him to prove to us that he can hit that pitch. I think with him, you know, it could all happen very quickly. I've seen it happen before. Guys who have a little length in their swings, guys who have a weakness in that side of the plate, all of a sudden they come up with a technique that allows them to beat it. Boom. They start getting more at-bats. And it's going to happen that quick for him.
Yeah, it's another chance for him in a career that's had a lot of ups and downs, and he's going to be on the club, so people shouldn't be surprised to see him this weekend. Speaking of new faces this weekend, Mike, it looks like, by all indications, the Giants are going to activate a new starting pitcher on Sunday, Alex Wood. And, you know, we've seen him with the Dodgers. We know what he can do. We'll just see him in the black and orange on Sunday. And, you know, it's just another kind of Farhan pickup and kind of what you're expecting from him. And I also... I guess it moves Logan Webb. The idea was to move Logan Webb to the bullpen, but it looks like with Cueto, Logan would come on back. So we asked Sean Estes about this yesterday, but I'll ask you. It's sort of a two-part question. A, what you think Alex Wood will bring to the table, and B, sort of the Webb mindset when Kapler has to have that conversation with him. Hey, we're going to use you out of the pen. And then all of a sudden with Cueto, well, now maybe we don't use you out of the pen. Just kind of those two things.
Well, in regards to Alex Wood, I mean, he would be the only left-hander in the rotation, and it was the plan in spring training that he was going to be in that fifth spot. And in spring training, Logan Webb was going to be the swingman in the bullpen that could come into an existing inning with that sink and get out of an existing inning. He's a guy that could, you know, be the long starter or the long reliever if a starter got rocked early, and then. Transition into a spot start if somebody goes down in the rotation. Well, that all got moved out because of the type of spring that he had. So they didn't know how long it was going to take for Alex Wood to get back in the rotation. Well, with a couple starts from Logan Webb, that, well, I didn't think they were all that bad. I thought that they, you know, he gave the team a chance to win both times. When Alex Wood came back in, there all of a sudden became an incredible need for another right-hander that in the bullpen that they could rely upon. Maranta goes on the disabled list. They've got Matt Whistler, who wasn't being consistent. He hadn't really got a command of a slider yet, so he was a big if. Well, you couldn't really trust him in a 7th, 8th, and 9th inning situation there for about 5 or 6 days. And the only right-hander you had was Tyler Rogers. Well, you can't keep running him out there every day. You need another right-hander. So when Alex Wood said, I'm good to go, the obvious choice was Webb, who was going to be that guy in the pen in the first place, and only because of his great spring did he move into a rotational spot and the injury to Wood. So now Logan Webb goes back into the pen, and they used him the other day. He came in through a clean 7th inning, and I really thought that they might have just let him finish out the game. He was throwing that well, and he's got so much strength in his arm, but they didn't. They went back to Tyler Rogers and then Jake McGee to close it out, and they get the win. But now with Johnny Cueto going on the injured list, well, the obvious choice is Webb comes back in the rotation. So he's a transition guy right now, and that's not a bad thing when you're a young pitcher. For Logan Webb, it actually is a bit easier to come into that role than to just jump into the rotation, especially after the expectation we all had in watching him dominate in spring training. As for Alex Wood, I mean, Wood tonight, I expect him to go 4 to 5 innings. The thing about him, which is so unusual, is he's got a real funky deliver. His delivery is it really collapses the backside, and he does not give the hitter an easy pickup when he comes up into a throwing position to pick up the release point where the ball's coming out of his hand. And he's a guy that's got one of the best curveballs in the National League, and he can spot it both sides of the plate. He could absolutely just pitch with that pitch, but he knows how to pitch, and he's got two types of fastball and a changeup, so he's going to give him a chance to win. I'd say 4 or 5 innings his first time out, and then eventually work into where he can go 5 to 6 or maybe 7. I mean, he's a veteran, and they'll handle him with kid gloves, and I don't think of him as a true innings eater because he has been a little fragile here the last couple of years, but it's good to get him back in the rotation. It's good to get a left-hander back in the rotation.
It is. Fun stuff. And so DeSclafani Friday, Sanchez Saturday, Wood Sunday. 4:10 first pitch today, 3:10 on Saturday, a little strange, and then 10:10 a.m. on Sunday morning. We do understand you're off this weekend, right, Mike? It's going to be Javi in for you?
Yeah, Javier Lopez will be coming in for this series and the Philly series early next week, so I won't be back until next weekend.
Hey, by the way, we had a digression yesterday with Sean Estes about, he was talking about Jake McGee and how he follows him because he's from Sparks, Nevada, and Sean's from Minden, Nevada. We start talking about Northern Nevada baseball, and he's talking about you, and he's like, hey, man, Mike's turned into our biggest booster. Hey, you're the face of Northern Nevada now, Mike.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I love it up here. It's great. I didn't think I'd ever leave San Luis Obispo. Jennifer and our family, we were there for 25 years. You know, we both went to Cal Poly, and what got us out of San Luis Obispo was grandchildren.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've come up here. You know, it's really unbelievable. Is that, you know, down in San Luis Obispo, as all of us in the Bay Area are, we're grounded to that ocean. You are. You check it out every day, whether by the ocean or by the bay or whatever, wherever you're at. You look at that water, it grounds you.
Yeah.
And such was the case in San Luis Obispo. You always knew what was going on with that ocean. You were there all the time. Well, when you're up in the High Sierra, it's the mountain that grounds you, and it's a different perspective on life, but it's a good one.
Yeah, man.
It's good stuff. You, McGee, and Sean Estes, you got to have a party together and hang out and talk Northern Nevada ball, man.
I'm in.
Hey, just a little bit on the vibe of the road trip. Kirk Casale gave that quote on Wednesday, and it got a little viral on the KNBR social media. He goes, you know, he was talking about how everything's going well and the belief, and they're 8-4, and they're getting timely hits, and they're pitching, and the bullpen's great. And he goes, we're vibing.
They're vibing, Mike.
As the kids say. He said, I hope that doesn't make me sound too old, which I laughed at as a guy who sounds too old every day. But, you know, just that. I'm wondering about that comment and then going on a road trip to Miami, and you talked about, you know, kind of, you know, it's the road. It's not home. You're not sleeping in your own bed. But there's a bonding that goes on the road, right? So take that Vibe and Casale quote and this trip to Miami and Philly, and it's kind of an opportunity, isn't it, for the team to sort of come together?
It is, and it starts on the long plane ride. You know, they have a great homestand. They get on that plane, and they're fired up, and they are vibing. They got it going, and the mood is light, and the laughter is loud, and it's fun. And then when you get, you know, on that long road trip, you get in there 4:35 in the morning. Well, that kind of bonds you too. A little misery together it forms chemistry. Then you get an off day in Miami, and you can move around a little bit, and you get the ocean, and they can all go out there and vibe to that vibe.
And there's some vibe. Paulie and I were there for the
is.
Super Bowl.
There really
there's
is.
A vibe.
I mean,
there's
you know, here you are. It's you're on the Atlantic coast, and it's gorgeous. It's a calming effect to be around the ocean, as we all know. But anyway, they get to the ballpark. They haven't been to, and some of these guys have never seen it. Some of the younger players have never seen this ballpark, and that's always fun. So you know, everything is going to be positive rolling into it. I mean, the only negative is when they got news about Johnny Cueto on the IL, but they got the good news that Alex Wood's coming back. So, you know, it's rolling right now, and this is all so important when you're putting together early season chemistry. April is chemistry month, and it's essential that you have a comeback win, that you have that you get some definition in your pen, that you get some definition in your lineup, you get some big time hits, and they're doing all that. And now this road trip adds right to them all starting to create chemistry. And I can't underline that enough, chemistry. It's important this time of year.
Yeah. Great stuff. And I mentioned at this top, but I was going to ask you about, for whatever reason, I've just been interested in this Dodgers-Padres meeting. I don't know, maybe it's just the people I follow on Twitter, or I get the LA Times online, and they're writing about it. And it's, you know, you grew up in Southern California, and I know we in Northern California are trained to hate them, but we got a lot of connections there, and some of us went to school down there, and we have friends down there, and these are the two teams in the Giants division, so you got to pay attention. This is like, they're kind of treating it like it's a sort of the beginning of almost a culture war, the Padres and the Dodgers. Now, the Giants will have a lot to say about this, and they could beat both those teams, and already took 2 of 3 from the Padres in San Diego. But just wondering, you as excited as you are for this Giants-Marlins game, are you kind of going to keep an eye on this Dodger-Padre thing? And also sort of the aspects, Mike, knowing both cultures, it's an interesting time in these franchises' histories, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, and I'll totally keep an eye on it. It's a very, very interesting matchup. There's a lot of talent on both clubs, a lot of expectation on both clubs. And I think, you know, we have an historical rivalry with the Dodgers, and it's wonderful. And it really is what I think is most spectacular about being in the National League West, if you could be part of that Dodger-Giant rivalry. But other rivalries happen when teams climb up the ladder and become good. I mean, you could have a rivalry with Colorado or Arizona or anybody when they're good and you're good, and the two best teams that are projected in a division meet. I mean, that forms a rivalry that, I mean, it'll only last 1, 2, 3, or 4 or whatever years, but it's a good one. It's a good series. When I first got into the National League back in the 70s, you know, the Padres, they were kind of a transient fan base. A lot of people down in San Diego were military. A lot of people there brought other loyalties to other teams. They didn't maybe – they went to a Padre game to see their Cardinal team play. You know, it was kind of that way. It was that way in Arizona. It was that way in Florida. And you can't say that about the Padres now. I mean, they've got a true San Diego Padre fan base. They love their Padres. And that's all evolved with time and success. And now that the Padres went through that decade where they're rebuilding and they've basically done their homework and they've got it in place to contend now, this is a fun team to watch. And down there, Padre Mania is legit. So the fact that they're going against the Dodgers, who are the defending world champions, that's an obvious, man. And I think we're all, as baseball fans, going to pay attention to this series. It's going to be a good one.
No, it is fun. I'm just getting kind of into it. By the way, do you have an opinion on a very important thing? When the Padres transitioned out of the brown and the yellow and went to that blue and the orange for a while, and then went to that blue and the gray, and now they're back to the brown and the yellow, what's your vote, Mike?
Yeah, good question.
I love it. I think I thought the very first all the yellow with brown shoes when they first started up was the most hideous uniform I'd ever seen. But after that, I always thought they got better. And now that they've gone back to brown and yellow, I think it's a sensational uniform. And it's got a good vibe to it. It does. And you know, I mean, look, if you're a designer, if you design here and you can make yellow and brown look good, you're the new Christian Dior, baby.
Nice. Yeah.
Dodgers don't go those. They don't do the alternates. They're sticking with the old Jackie Robinsons. They're sticking with the Gil Hodges, huh?
Well, it's hard to beat that uniform. That's a good one. And it's lasted through time. You know, it's like one thing about coming to San Francisco or L.A., you know that as a player, when you put that uniform on, it's going to mean something. It's going to connect you to a lot of different teams. And you look at yourself wearing that thing for the first time, and guess what? It's unbelievable. And from a Giants perspective, you look at yourself, you say, damn, this is the same one Willie Mays wore. And that's powerful.
Yep. It is awesome. Anyway, that's it should be fun, and the Giants and the Marlins should be fun. I'm just happy to see them in a different environment. We saw them in the West the entire season last year, and it's kind of fun to see a little cross-country travel. So, Dee Sclafani's got the ball, and we will talk to you, Mike, on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
Got a bit.
Mike Kruko doing his thing, getting us ready. Giants Marlins 4:10.
Pauly. I'm voting brown and yellow too. By the way, the classic Winfield look is the one I go for.
And by the way, Pauly, I know we got to duck out and get into top six and maybe a digression or two. But as I read on to this LA Times story by Sam Farr, there's endless more Walton quotes. Ready for this,
good,
dude?
Good. Yeah.
I've got my Padre uniform and my Padre hat and my Padre bat. I just wish I could play for them.
Oh, can you imagine Walton at the hot corner?
Yeah. Because we're very proud here. Best beaches, best air, best bicycling, best water, fantastic airport, everything you can imagine.
And he didn't even mention all the cool people that come out of San Diego. Your Waltons, your QB1s, your Steve Kerrs. You know what I mean?
There you go, man. Yeah. Very good. All right. Anyway, I just thought he'd get a kick out of Walton trying to. It's so funny because Walton probably doesn't know anything about the Padres. But by the way, call him up. He'll give you a quote, you know?
Murph, real quick, because Cope's in my ear just reminded me. Add John Lynch to the cool San Diego list, too.
Oh, for
John
sure.
Lynch.
Yeah. And Barry Zito, my friend.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, more of a Nashville guy now, though. Dude.
Well, he goes on. Walton claims that he used to go to games as a kid at the PCL at Westgate Hart Park. I knew who was coming up, so I'd position myself for the foul ball or home run.
You're not
run.
Buying that? I'm sure
I'm
he did.
Not. You know? This is what he says. He goes, I was quick to that ball. I was 9 or 10. I was not reluctant to jump over the chairs to get to the ball bouncing around in the bleachers. Oh. And that was a banked up hill of grass. He goes, when you're a tiny boy with red hair and a buzz cut, man, the ushers and ticket takers were always more than kind to Little Billy.
Little Billy. All right. I never heard that one before. Call me Little Billy.
You know who else Sammy quotes in this piece is San Diego native Cameron Crowe.
There's another one. Jeez, the list keeps coming. Yeah.
Says, San Diego is my bloodstream. Getting back to San Diego when you've been elsewhere is so satisfying. So anyway, we're trying to find some Padre love there.
We got a pretty decent list of proud San Diegans there with your Lynch. You got Cameron Crowe. You got Walton. You got QB1. You got Kerr. Who else? Anybody else I left off? We'll just keep adding.
Zito?
Barry Zito. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, there you go. Listen, you are listening to the KBR Morning Show on KBR and KBR FM San Francisco. The Power Hour continues on The Sports Leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.